Hello and welcome. It's our bonus Q&A episode of Books of the Year. We're here in the studio with international best-selling author, number one on the New York Times bestseller list, as he exclusively revealed in our other podcast.
Indeed.
It's Harlan Coben. So if you want to hear all the details about I Will Find You, that's on our other podcast if you've come to the Q&A first. Anyway, here we go with our regular questions. Question number one, what is the last book that you really, really enjoyed reading? I don't want something that you quite liked, something that you thought that was fantastic.
I just finished an advanced copy of Dennis Lehane's next book, which is coming out in a couple of months, or maybe even when this comes out sooner, called Small Mercies. It takes place in Boston in the 1970s during the racial strife of busing. And Dennis Lehane's long been not just a friend, but one of my favorite writers. And I know a lot of the people listening are wondering, and I think his new novel's fantastic.
So this is another author and it's a book that's not out, so there's a limit to what you can say. Can you explain just a little bit as to why you think he is so good and why you think this is such an exceptional story without spoiling his promotion?
I think Dennis is a wonderful writer. I think he just really gets into characters, and you feel that the lead character in this is a woman without means trying to get through this racial strife that is Boston in the 1970s, single mom, and her daughter goes missing during this racial strife. And the mother has to figure out what happened, even though the rest of the city doesn't seem interested.
Okay, so that's Small Mercies, Dennis Lehane.
Small Mercies, Dennis Lehane.
A big Dennis fan as well.
Yeah, good. You'll enjoy it.
Yeah, you'll
enjoy it.
Were books a big part of your childhood growing up?
Yes. I mean, I wasn't like, you know, again, writers always make it out like, oh, you know, all I did was have my nose in a book. You know, I was more a basketball player. I think more people, if they had grown up with me, would have guessed I would have ended up a basketball player than a writer. But yes, books in my house were revered. That's the interesting thing. Like, it didn't matter what kind of book. When I was a kid, you know, we didn't have a ton of money. On Sundays, we would drive as a family into New York City. And it was a bookstore annex on 18th Street where you could get a paper bag, like a shopping paper bag, and you could fill it for $5. And my mother and my father, myself, my brothers, we would go and we would spend all day browsing books. And then my father would pack that bag like it was a game of Tetris. You know what I mean?
Wow.
He would use every available space to maximize what we could get for the $5. We were always allowed to buy any book we wanted, though. It didn't matter how expensive or cheap. Always around my house, there were piles of books next to everybody's bed. You're supposed to keep the house neat, but no one cared about that. And it didn't matter what you were reading, but you were encouraged, not by being told to, but my parents loved to read everything in the world. And so I think we brothers learned to revere and love books.
So was there a genre or an author you would target when you were a kid?
My favorites growing up, and this answer may seem a little pat because I don't think there's many surprises. C.S. Lewis's Narnia series was just huge when I was fourth, fifth grade around then. A Wrinkle in Time series by Madeleine L'Engle was another one, boy, I couldn't get enough of. Moving slightly younger, Roald Dahl and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I still remember that feeling of how badly you wanted Charlie to get that golden ticket. Do you remember that? I mean, he just wanted it. Of course, now I look back on it and I kind of envy the parents, grandparents who never left the bed. That sounds like a delightful fantasy to me right now, the grandparents who never left the bed. But you still remember that, don't you, after all these years? And not because of the movie, you remember it because of the book. And to go back a little farther, just kind of for fun, the very first mystery novel that I ever read was a picture book by P.D. Eastman called Are You My Mother?, where a bird falls out of his mother's nest and goes searching, asks a dog, asks a cat, asks a giant bulldozer, are you my mother? And it's frightening. And then, so that's those are the books that I remember from my childhood.
And just in parenthesis, maybe, when you discovered, I was quite late to this, that Roald Dahl was such a fierce anti-Semite and had such unpleasant views, does that spoil your enjoyment of the novel, or can you separate author and novel?
I can still, at least with him, I'm not saying with everybody, but with Roald Dahl, I can still separate that out. I haven't really studied all of the controversy around him now. I don't read him anymore just because, I read him, though, to my kids. I remember reading Matilda out loud to my kids. It doesn't really, for me right now, affect the work in that case.
Can you write anywhere? I've heard you say in the past you're a street writer. What does that mean? And are you quite flexible as to where you write?
I am, most writers that you've spoken to, a lot of writers, probably most have an office or a space. I do not. Though during COVID, I've had to change. But I like to use different places. I use a place until it stops working, and then I find another place. It's like I find a horse. I'm going to ride that horse as hard and long as I can. The horse is going to drop dead. I'm going to look for another horse. A couple of examples. So, you have the Starbucks, and you have the library, and you have whatever. For a little while, I found in my huge supermarket in New Jersey, there was like a little coffee table right next to the deli counter. I came home smelling like olive loaf every night. But I wrote there really well for a couple of months. And then for some reason, I wasn't. So I changed day and night. And the other example I give is when I was writing The Stranger, this is 10 or 12 years ago now, I took my first Uber into New York City from New Jersey. And I felt tremendous guilt about spending the money, but I just didn't feel like driving that day. And I want to try it out. And I'm sitting in the back feeling guilty about the money I'm spending. And I'm trying to justify it, like we were talking about justifying before in the earlier podcast. And I'm thinking, well, by the time I spend money on parking, blah, blah, blah. But, So I took out my pen and paper and I started to write. And I wrote really well. So for 3 weeks, I took Ubers everywhere I went. And I finished The Stranger.
Pen and paper in the back of a cab.
Yeah. Goodness. And I wrote, and I finished The Stranger in the back. That's the other thing. Sometimes I'll use pen and paper. Most of the time I do. But if I'm not doing well with that, I'll go straight on the computer. Anything, again, anything that can make you write. Anything that makes me write, good. Anything that doesn't make me write, bad.
So many of your books, Harlan, end up on the screen. Do you have a favorite adaptation of one of your books?
I don't. It's sort of interesting. I mean, a lot of people pick the first one, Tell No One, the French movie. I really like The Innocent, the Netflix Spain show that we recently did. I like The Stranger. My personal favorite is The Five, which is probably the least known, though it was filmed here in England and we have it on, I think you have it on your Sky at home. Though even though I see the faults with that, there's a certain heart and soul of that one that I really love.
Now, we like to surprise our authors with a voice note question from a fellow author or celebrity fan. We've actually got two in your case, two voice notes from two very big fans of yours. The first, we've already mentioned him, and in fact, we talk about him far too often. Anyway, here comes a question from author, TV presenter, all-round good bloke, Richard Osman.
Hey, Harlan. Hey, Simon. Hey, Matt. It is Richard Osman here, Harlan, your fellow crime writer and fellow Fulham fan. I have a question for you, and that is, in the way that we revere Agatha Christie now, and everyone agrees that she's one of the greatest crime writers of all time, who from this generation do you think will still be read in 100 years' time? Thanks, mate.
That's a great question. If I can go maybe not quite to our era, I would probably pick Robert B. Parker, who did the Spencer series. I think that he's been a tremendous influence on a lot of your favorite writers today. If I have to pick somebody who is a colleague of mine today, again, it would be really hard, but maybe Michael Connelly. If I had to just pick one, And I'm probably, Man Plans, God Laughs. I'll probably be wrong about that. I can name four others off the top of my head. And we've talked about them quite frequently on the show. But you're forcing me to pick one. Robert B. Parker and then Michael Connelly.
He is great.
He is superb.
Absolutely.
Is that true? You're a Fulham fan?
My brother is on the Fulham board, lives on Fulham Palace Road, has had season tickets for 25 years. And when he turned 50, Richard helped me get tickets and we went down to the field. It was the happiest day of his life. And Fulham won that game on his 50th birthday, 5-0. What are the chances of any of that 5-0 happening?
On your 50.
I know. Wow. And so Richard and I joke about Fulham. So I guess I'm a Fulham fan just because by default I have to be a Fulham fan.
By osmosis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're doing well. Right. Our second voice note is from actor Richard Armitage, who, of course, is starring in the Netflix adaptation of Fool Me Once. And you did an event, I think, with him last night.
Yeah.
So here he is.
Hey, Harlan. It's Richard Armitage here again. I promise I am not stalking you, but there was a question from last night that I forgot to ask you, and it is this. Do you ever think about breaking your genre and writing something like a horror or a romance? See you later.
My normal answer to that is no, and here's why. I don't look at thrillers, or whatever you want to call this, suspense, thrillers, mystery, what Michael Connelly and Lee Child and all the guests you've had do, as a genre. I look at it as a form. It's like saying a haiku or a sonata. And within that form, I can and have done everything I've wanted to do as a writer. I've studied friendships, family, relationships, all the themes that I want to hit, I do. And the reason why I think thrillers are so vital today, and the reason why thrillers sell so well and do so well today, is because being the form of a thriller makes us tell a story, makes us compelling, makes you keep turning pages. It is a rich tradition. I would argue that most of your favorite writers who have survived 100 years, if I ask you to name your favorite books from 100 years ago, there is a murder or a death in them. It is a thrilling aspect. Oscar Wilde, Dumas, Dostoevsky. So I would argue, not that I'm comparing us to them. I am saying that that's how I look at it. That said, I do have an idea for a TV series I'm going to do that is more supernatural, which I've never done before. So after giving that answer for years, I may. But I don't say, oh, I want... And I also think, like Richard mentioned in the question, romance. In my view, Tell No One, for example, is more of a romance than a thriller. It's a man who's lost his wife and he can't move on, and now he realizes he has a chance to find her again. That's a romance. I Will Find You, yes, it's a thriller, but what's driving it is father-son. And so, and also the last answer I'll give, I steal a little bit from Lee Child, which is, it's not my job to give you every reading experience, right? It's not, if you want to read something that's slower paced with, you know, kind of more normal life stuff, there's other writers, and I'll try to do what I do best.
Final question. It's slightly overwritten, and it'll probably have a brief answer. If you could turn back time, and Morpheus was stood before you with the red pill and the blue pill, if you take the red pill, you'll become a hugely successful author, 35 books, 80 million copies sold, etc., several screen adaptations. If you take the blue pill, you'll be one of the top basketball players in the world. Let's say the number one basketball player in the world, Michael Jordan levels of skill. Which pill are you going to take?
I'm going to take the pill to keep how I am right now. I am so lucky, and it would be bad karma to even imagine a life that's different than this one. It's turned out so much better than I would have ever imagined. The longer answer is that when I started, and I think this is great advice, my ambitions were very small and incremental. So it was like, oh, wouldn't it be cool one day if I had a novel published and I saw it in the store? Just one novel. I don't care if it sells. I just want to one day see my novel. Okay, two novels. Can I just have, just the show wasn't a freak. I just want, just two novels. Okay, can I just scratch out a living so I'm not embarrassing myself by saying I'm an, and then eventually, oh, wouldn't it be great if I hit number one?
Again.
Yeah, again, thank you. I love what I'm doing. And also, here's the problem with being, and I feel bad for pro athletes, who a number of whom I know and are friends, that career ends pretty quickly. Even if you're Michael Jordan, by the time you're 40, you're done. Novelists, I'm now 61, and I'm still hopefully in my prime in terms of novel writing. So I would choose this life over any in that sense.
Harlan, thank you very much indeed. Harlan Coben, you can hear all of the explanation about his new book, I Will Find You, on our companion podcast. Harlan Coben, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. It was great hanging.